Absolutely. Because we have the ability to enforce it. You know, as President Trump says, if Iran steps out of line, if they don't behave, boom, we come right back with military options. The other thing is that the money that you've mentioned, the investment funds and all that, we can see where Iran is using its money now. We couldn't do that a year ago. But the countries where it keeps a lot of its money, the Gulf Arab countries, they've opened their books to us. So if Iran says, oh, we're going to use it, like you said, to build sewage plants and hospitals, but they really are going to give it to Hezbollah, we'll see it move. And then what happens? Boom, we can enforce the agreement. The difference of all the agreements anybody's ever tried to do with Iran, we have the enforcement capability now, because that armada is going no place. And we also have the enforcement capability because the Gulf Arabs, for the first time ever, they usually sit out any conflict in the Middle East. This time, they're on our side.
So there you have the former Deputy National Security Advisor, KT McFarland, on Fox News, reacting to the deal and saying it's enforceable and speaking a little more positively than other folks that I've heard react to the Memorandum of Understanding signed in Versailles last night by President Trump. Let's get Lieutenant General Keith Kellogg here with us, co-chair of American Security at America First Policy Institute, also former assistant to the president and special presidential envoy for Ukraine. General Kellogg, thank you for the time today. It's great to have you with us.
Hey, Annie, good to be with you. Thanks for having me.
Of course. Just open question. How do you feel about the Memorandum of Understanding between the United States and Iran?
Well, I think what everybody has to do is relax in the harness. In other words, chill out a little bit. Look, it's a memorandum of understanding. It builds to the deal, which they haven't got delivered yet. It's an interim deal. Handshake shows intent to go forward. And I think it's going to be restructured a little bit as to the importance of each element to it. It's primarily an economic deal when you look at it. And I think that didn't surprise me knowing where Donald Trump comes from. For example, nuclear is not even mentioned until Article 8 of the 14 articles in there. The first articles are all about economics. And I can see that being developed and what's going forward. And I think you have to look at it, where do you want to go with this? And I think where they want to go with it is they don't want a worldwide recession. They were heading there probably not with us, but the fact is that oil was really destined for others. We don't need it. We don't use it at all, except for the state of California. So I looked at it and I said, well, this is one that's going to be worked out over the next 60 days. What does it look like? Where's the importance of it? And who's going to be kind of running it? The whole thing is that, do you trust the Iranians? I don't.
Yeah.
And I think getting to a proper end state, if based on economy, is great. But they're one of those guys you just don't really trust a lot.
Sure.
So I don't see where they're going to go. I don't think President Trump realizes how much damage the United States has really done to them militarily. You're not going to see them come back in the next couple of years. This is going to be something that will be developed after Trump's watch, well in the future. So I'm not as, you know, gloom and doom as a lot of people are right now, because I understand it to be as a memorandum. It's an interim state versus a final state. And you want to kind of say, what does the final state look like? And that is primarily, I worry about, is recovering the enriched uranium that in the document says is going to be basically put under control of IAEA, which is probably the proper place, that they build it and they get it out of there. So I would say let's just hold fire, meaning what is it going to look like at the end? Be a lot of input. Congress will have input. Other people will have input. And we'll see where it ends up at.
Here's a question. General Kellogg speaking with us right now. Would you be surprised if this time next week Iran's bombing people and we're right back to where we were before this MOU was signed?
Would I be surprised, Annie?
Yeah.
No, not at all.
I didn't think so.
Because I don't trust them at all. You know, so this is one of those, I don't think it'll happen next week. But I think over time, when you look at the Middle East, the situation, it's a very volatile area. And I wouldn't be surprised if there's some type of kinetic action that's going to occur. And it's one of those, you kind of have to accept it. What's going to be his response you're going to have there? There will be a lot of people who are just going to say, oh, it's just a simple violation. No, it's not. And we'll see where it goes. I primarily worry about Israel, Lebanon, Hezbollah, what's going to happen there. Mm-hmm. And I don't think anybody's really been a very good predictor of what's going to happen with kinetic actions in the Middle East. I think so. I go back to my starting comment to you. Would I be surprised by it? And the answer would be no.
Yeah. I think that that's a lot of the common reaction is there's no room for any trust in Iran and what their new intent might be. They'd have to prove it over and over and over again for quite some time before people would even consider trusting them to act differently than they have always acted. KT McFarland, in that clip that we played before we brought you on, was stating some things that are very different at this moment in time compared to other opportunities we've had to make agreements. But also, I'd like to ask you, and you've spoken a little bit about this here, where we are right now with Iran, Iran's capabilities right now compared to before the president started the bombing here to make sure that they decimated their military. Has President Trump and his administration put Iran in a different position than they've ever been before when these negotiations were taking place? Is it really a very different set of circumstances?
Yeah, I would say it is, because their military has been badly damaged in their missile systems, their air defense systems, their air force. They haven't got a navy anymore. So I would say that militarily, they're much less of a power, or they can influence much less than before. And the fact that the Israelis took out Hezbollah, they took out Hamas, the Houthis have been relatively quiet, it shows that their interaction among the region has been diminished. That doesn't mean they're not going to build back. That doesn't mean they won't play an active role. But today, and probably tomorrow, I would say that their ability to do that has been greatly diminished. So in that much, I would say, yeah, it's been pretty good for us.
We're speaking with Lieutenant General Keith Kellogg, co-chair of American Security at America First Policy Institute. President Trump has been very clear the entire time. He's summed it up as the goal is to ensure that Iran will never have a nuclear weapon. After the strait was closed, there was a second point that was the strait must be fully reopened. Has this conflict become broader than those goals that President Trump set out to accomplish because of the actions that have taken place?
Well, I, you know, when you look at it, you know, we're just advisors and we have noise level. But when it comes to actual decision making, that's why he gets paid the big bucks to make those decisions. And I think, you know, my concern has always been that as long as you've got a theocratic regime in charge, hardline revolutionary guards, you're going to have a problem, because these are the ones who chant, and they've been chanting over decades, death to America, death to Israel. Well, you got to believe that they mean that. And even though we've really damaged their leadership, and now their leadership is down to second or third tier, they're going to probably go back. And that's what you concern yourself with. Not over the next 2 years, but next 3 years, 4 years, 5 years, are we going to be confronted with the same problem 5 years from now? And I hate to say it, but it, as long as you've got this theocratic government in charge, the probability is, yeah, you are. That's my issue.
Mm, yeah. General Kellogg speaking with us right now. Does this conflict have any collateral consequence? I don't necessarily box it in to say damage. Any collateral consequence to the war that's still taking place in Ukraine, between Ukraine and Russia? Has there been any fallout from the Iran conflict that has affected anything that's going on in Ukraine?
Yeah, I think so. I think because Russia has become a diminished power and their equipment isn't as good. And the focus, here's what's been helpful, is our focus has been the Middle East. Because of that, we've kind of left Ukraine alone. And Ukraine's been able to establish a position of not dominance, but be on the offensive with Russians. And they can kind of do that without us being looking over their shoulder. So in that regard, it's been very helpful. Not weaponry, but influence. And I think that's good that Ukraine has gone there. And I think it's hurt the Russians. Even the other day when the president was at the G7, he mentioned he wants Russia to make a deal. Notice he didn't say he wants for Ukraine to make a deal. Mm-hmm. He wanted Russia to make a deal. That's a shift. And it's a subtle shift, but it's one I picked up on right away.
Yeah. It's China has been affected, of course, with the oil, access to oil, both with the Iran conflict and also our action in Venezuela. How has the administration's managing of these foreign situations affected probably our biggest adversary in multiple fronts in China?
Well, it's affected China because China is very dependent on oil that's coming out of the Middle East, primarily Iran. So they probably had their ears perked up when we damaged the heck out of Iran, because they give them all their frontline equipment along with the Russians, and we were able to defeat it. Plus, the president's come out of this very much stronger in controlling their oil, and he understands that. So I think, if anything, it put a check with the Chinese that they realized they're going to have to deal with the United States as a very powerful entity from a power position, and it's not something they can control. But that's the good news. Here's the bad news. They realize that if you can secure a choke point, like the Strait of Hormuz, they can do the same with the South China Sea. And they can get a lot of, traffic goes through the South China Sea. Mm-hmm. So this freedom of navigation is important. They show that the Iranians can control that. So I think they've now got in their game plan, well, what if we control the South China Sea and the entrance by tankers or the economics of that? That's going to be very important in the future.
General Kellogg speaking with us right now on the pending Iran deal, which is currently a memorandum of understanding. Those are very different things. A peace deal and a memorandum of understanding. One can lead to the other, but isn't a guarantee, certainly. General Kellogg, has our efforts with minimizing Iran's ability to impact the world, it seems as though the president, especially in discussing that they were sneaking oil out amidst the shutting down of the Strait of Hormuz, is the world reconfiguring their reliance on Iran to the point where even if the Strait were fully open, that maybe other places that were enriching Iran by purchasing their products, they're taking their exports, that maybe the world has found a different way around that wouldn't put Iran in the position to close the Strait down once again?
Yeah, I think it will. I mean, and like the Saudis can actually deliver oil from the Red Sea, because they've built that big pipeline that goes to Yanbu, is where they want to take it out. So they can do that, and they can offset the Strait of Hormuz. So I think they're thinking about that. They're very creative about it. And I think that the Iranians have been diminished, and their oil production has been diminished. But what they'll do to offset that, they'll sell oil a lot cheaper. So I think people are looking at a way around this. They're not going to sit static, but they'll try to figure out what is a different way to get oil. They can get it from us. You know, we're exporting oil, we the United States, that we've never really done before. So this is a chance for us to get pretty heavily involved in the oil game as well.
And then last question I have, and we're really grateful for your time. We're speaking with Lieutenant General Keith Kellogg. It seems to me like the natural flow of power would see potentially Iran's power diminishing, and then maybe someone else decides to try to fill some sort of void that exists. And maybe if Iran's not going to be the state sponsor of terror anymore, then maybe somebody else is looking to fill in that opportunity. Are there any other places in the world right now that, while everybody's eyes are squarely on what's going on in Iran and specifically the Strait of Hormuz, are you looking anywhere else right now to just kind of see how they react?
Well, with the Middle East, I think Iran's irritated their neighbors, the Emiratis, the Qataris, the Bahrainis, the Saudi Arabians. So I think those places, the region is going to fairly well align with the United States. And then with the Houthis out there kind of on their own with Yemen, and then with Israel controlling Hezbollah in Lebanon, I don't see anybody else coming in. It's sort of like Iran's not a pariah state, but they're getting close. And for the United States to operate in that region, I think is good. I think all the neighbors of Iran realize that these guys are thugs and they've gravitated more to us. So I think it's been good in the long term. What's going to happen with the United States and our relations with other partners in the Middle East. So it's actually good for us, not bad.
Well, we will continue to follow it, of course, as you are, and we're always grateful that you spend a little bit of your time with us. Lieutenant General Keith Kellogg, thank you for being with us this afternoon.
Thanks, Annie.
Take care. Bye-bye. He is the co-chair of American Security at the America First Policy Institute, and very generous of his time here so he can speak to you. It's great to have him back on the show. We'll take a quick break here. Ryan's coming back in studio, and I'm going to take your text messages right now. I want to know localities that are having e-bike concerns. Is it just Madison County, Illinois? Maybe I'm just airing our dirty laundry out there for everybody. Should electronic bikes be more heavily regulated? Yes, no, or what's an e-bike? YouTube.com/@Annie Fry to vote and to comment, and your texts on the Annie Fry Show text line at 314-241-9797. Back in a minute.